You ready for some coffee, honey?
Absolutely.
I'll pour.
Great coffee. I'm Dr. Ron Martinelli.
And I'm Linda Martinelli.
And we are Talking
While Married. Well, good evening, hon.
Well, how you doing? How's California?
Well, California is good. I'm having a good time and as good as I can be, being at work every day, including the weekends. But I'll tell you what I'm not liking is I went to get gas in the car today and it's $3.65 a gallon. And in Texas, it was, what, $1.69 last week?
$1.69 in Austin. And I just got some gas yesterday to get over to our friend Larry Nichols' house for his surprise birthday party in New Braunfels, and I paid $1.81. So they just do it to themselves, you know, and it just seems, well, you know, you can't even blame that on the government because the voters actually voted for the gas increase. You know, I don't know what those people are thinking, but, you know, it just goes on and on. Did you see where Gavin Newsom, the incoming new governor, has already put something out on the floor to tax tap water?
Yes, I have seen that. Yeah, that's, you know, that's just crazy because, oh my gosh, we could get in a whole conversation about that. The Department of Water and Power in Los Angeles, I mean,
What a racket the DWS
is. A bad history.
Oh my God, the DWP, crazy.
People pay for this water anyway in their taxes, and now we want to, that's like a tax on a tax. So I don't even understand how they do this, but they just can't take enough money, which is this whole thing about the income. I just wrote an article about it today because the whole thing about the government thinking that we have unlimited funds in our pockets to pay for any little thing that they choose to do in any way that they choose to take the money. It's really gotten out of hand, I think.
Well, you know what really bothers me? And of course, they're all attorneys and they set this beautiful environment up for themselves. Okay, so the government is on shutdown and we've got about 800,000 government workers, including, you know, our Border Patrol, our ICE, our federal law enforcement officers, and TSA. All right, so they're all not getting paid. But yet, all these Congress people and senators that create this situation, they're all getting paid. Okay, so nothing stops for them. They're the people that created this problem, and no pay stops for them. They are getting paid throughout this whole thing. And I'll tell you what, somebody has got to put a bill forward to prevent these people from getting paid when the government shuts down. You know, I mean, this is ridiculous. But you know what? Somebody might do it, but nobody will back it. All right.
Right. And they're not going to vote for anything that takes their own money away or their perks or their slush funds or their pensions or any of those things that they all get, which is way over the top.
And, you know, I wish I could say that I knew enough about government, this faction of the government, to know whether or not the people of the United States can put forth initiatives like you do in Texas or like we did in California, where we can actually vote with regards to whether or not they get a pay increase, term limits, you know, all of these different things. And I don't know the answer as to whether we could or not. I think the answer is we can't, or else this would have happened a long time ago because people are so angry with these politicians. And I saw I think you and I talked about it not too long ago, but there was a survey that was out. as to what the level of respect is for different careers. Law enforcement was in the top three, military was in the top three, and politicians in the mainstream media were all the way down at the bottom, with politicians at 11% and mainstream media at about 13%. So they've done this to themselves.
Well, they have. And in answer to your question, I'm not sure either, but I don't believe you can do that in the federal government. You can only do it in the state governments, in the states that allow you to put initiatives forth like that. But how we would ever take it away from Congress or Senate at this point, I don't know, because they're not going to do it themselves. They can vote themselves raises, and they can vote themselves higher pensions, and they can do whatever they want. So we really don't have anything to say except for with our vote. And my question would be, how's that working for us?
Well, you know, and then speaking again of the rich elite, politicians like Nancy Pelosi and, Chuck Schumer, people like that. And I'm even going to include a couple of Republicans in here. Of course, you saw during the governmental shutdown that Nancy Pelosi and six other congressional members were going to jump on military aircraft to get them over to Davos, Switzerland, and then from there go to maybe Afghanistan and a couple of other Brussels, couple of other places, because we have some NATO things going on and some European alliance things going on. But here's the thing: it's not really a business junket like they're talking about. Really, it's a vacation, because you had seven congressional people, but you had 93 accompanying family members, many of which who were children. And thank God that President Trump, and I love this part, they were on the buses, literally going to the airport to board these free ride military aircraft. And of course, this is all on our dime, including when they're over there having a grand vacation in Europe and these other countries for this so-called fact-finding, stuff that they get anyway every single day through memos and reports and things. But anyway, President Trump put the kibosh on it and made the buses turn around and deliver them right back to the Hall of Congress.
Yeah, I thought that was great. I was reading some little blurb on Facebook that said that Nancy Pelosi wants President Trump to delay the State of the Union due to lack of her personal security, and at the same time refusing funds for our national security. The amount of money that President Trump is asking for the wall and the stalemate is over is equal to 0.13% of the $4.5 trillion in federal outlays. And so it's basically like a tenth of a percent of money. And we're holding up the whole government over this because they just want to obstruct President Trump. And like we've talked about, Ron, these same people have advocated, voted for, funded the wall in the past. So all of a sudden the wall is immoral, and I don't understand that. But what is immoral is what's going on in the country in allowing the people to flood across our borders as they are. And 63% of those people, 63% of the illegals are on some sort of federal welfare type assistance here. And that money is money that we all work for and is going to illegal aliens. And that doesn't even count the legal citizens that are on subsistence or assistance from the government. So how much money do we think that we can spend on this?
Well, here's what really frosts my socks about this whole thing. So we have American citizens and loyal federal workers, including security, TSA, and law enforcement, who are not getting paid. And the reason that they're not getting paid is because these Congress people, these Democratic Congress people, are holding things up For who? For illegal aliens. So you think more about illegal aliens and illegal alien criminals than you do about the loyal federal employees, including people that provide your safety and security to this nation. That's the Democrats for you, okay? And they can lay this on President Trump all day long, but I listened to President Trump's speech yesterday about the wall and about, you know, getting together with the Democrats and what concessions he was willing to make. Did you hear that yesterday?
I did, yes.
Okay. I thought it was a very well discussed, very well articulated series of compromises where he was willing to extend DACA for 3 years, TPS for three more years. I think he was doing pretty much everything that he possibly could do to get the Democrats back to the bargaining table. And even before he gave his speech, of course, the Democrats always get a copy of the speech before the president's going to do it. And they already shut it down. And I was listening today on Fox News. I was listening to Mike Wallace. I'm not really a fan of Mike Wallace, but he had the third in command in the Congress discussing this whole stalemate issue. And the guy says, yeah, it's going to be a non-starter. We won't negotiate with Trump until he opens the government back up. But that's not going to happen.
Well, that shouldn't happen because they will not negotiate with him in good faith as soon as he opens the government. This is all about a win. And who's losing here? The American workers are losing, the federal workers, the American people are losing our safety and security in several different ways between the airports, the borders, the food inspectors. Those things are suffering. And I don't blame President Trump for this. I do blame the Democrats for this because they absolutely refuse to negotiate. And we put them there to negotiate. And even prior to that, Ron, we put, as American people voting in America, we put President Trump in to do the things that he told us he would do. The mantra from America said to build a wall. That is what was said to everybody in the country when we voted for him. And they are refusing to do the will of the American people out of their obstinance, out of their revenge, out of their unacceptance of this president. And this is not their position. It was our choice as Americans to put him there to carry out these things. And they're obstructing it. And I just can't tell you how wrong I think that is.
Well, you know, I just think he's just bent over backwards to try to be fair about this. Okay, so he's looking at 700,000 DACA recipients, and he's also looking at 300,000 recipients for the temporary protected status, you know, the TPS program. And that's a program that protects immigrants from designated countries, okay, under certain prescribed conditions. My God, he's extending it for another 3 years. So, and what he's also asked for, besides the $5.7 billion for the wall, which is, as you correctly indicated, just a pittance, okay, as Nancy Pelosi would say, it's crumbs, but he wants an allocation of $800 million for drug detection technology. He needs to secure our ports of entry. He wants almost 2,800 new border agents and law enforcement people, and 75, and this is a big one, 75 new immigration judges so he can start to reduce the ridiculous backlog. And he said that the backlog for people claiming asylum, do you know how many cases are backlogged? Take a guess.
I heard it. Was it 90,000 or 900,000?
900,000.
Yeah.
So I think you could probably put 1,000 judges, okay? So just imagine that. Have 1,000 federal judges to handle nothing but asylum and immigration cases, and they would that would still average out to 90 cases a month. I mean, 90 cases a year. Now, I know that's not very many, but you know what I'm saying. I mean, per person, right? Look
right.
how much work. I mean, how the hell are 75 guys, more guys, going to deal with 900,000 backlog cases?
Well, I don't know how they're going to do it, but the thing is that the Democrats have said that these things were important to them all along. They said that DACA was important. They said that getting these people through the process was important. Getting these people, you know, out of places that they're kept in is important. And President Trump is giving them all of this on a platter, and they're refusing it. And it is just to be obstinate. America has to see this, and I think that they don't like it. This is just not what our government's supposed to do and how they're supposed to take care of things in this country. Well, Ron, you know, it's interesting that Chuck Schumer came into Congress in 1981 and Nancy Pelosi in 1987. Yet President Trump has been there for 2 years and he's been taking the blame for everything. These people have been in there all these years, and all of this should have been fixed long before President Trump got here. So who's really to blame for these problems? It's certainly not President Trump.
You know, that's just amazing. I know they'd been in Congress for a long time, but the whole, you know, he's been there since 1981 and she's been there since 1987. My God. You know, this just screams to me term limits.
I was just going to say the same thing.
You know, this was never intended. The founding fathers, when they created the Congress and the Senate, they never intended for people to do more than like one term in office. Okay? They never intended that. They intended this to be actually a hardship for people to come in. It was, you know, volunteerism. They would come in and they would do a term or so in office, and then they would leave and go back to being normal citizens again. So this is clearly out of control. Hey, I'm going to grab a cup of coffee and I'll meet you back here in a minute.
Okay.
I'm Dr. Ron Martinelli.
And I'm Linda Martinelli.
As former law enforcement officers, we know that your life and the lives of those you love and work with can change in an instant when you encounter an active shooter.
Unfortunately, in today's world of uncertainty, encountering an armed active shooter can have deadly consequences. That's why the key to survival is training and preparedness.
And that's why we want to invite our listeners to seriously consider taking our Response to Active Shooter training course.
Violence can happen to you anytime and anywhere and when you least expect it. Having a response and survival plan and engaging it can be the difference between life and death for you or a family member.
Our Response to Active Shooter courses are customized for the corporate, school, church, restaurant, and small business environment at a reasonable budget that fits your needs.
So don't put this life-saving training off because you don't think it will ever happen to you. We call those people victims.
Our Response to Active Shooter instructors are all nationally renowned tactical law enforcement experts who will guide you through the life-saving protocols you'll need to survive an active shooter event.
So be a victor, not a victim. Go to responsetoactiveshooter.com to learn more today.
Remember, that's all one word, responsetoactiveshooter.com, and be safe out there.
Well, you know what? We're just talking while married.
that's what we do. We talk while married. So, you know, recently, Ron, they had the Women's March. Last year, it was a big deal. This year, not so much. There has been a lot of divisiveness and controversy around this event this time. And, you know, it's interesting because doesn't it seem like that's just the way it is in everything right now, controversy and divisiveness in everything that's going on. But here's another thing where women were supposed to be united, and they had a lot of issues this year with a lot of the women came in and they kind of cozied up to Louis Farrakhan and his man. Anti-Semitism.
Oh, for sure. He's that guy is a complete, not only is an anti-Semite, but he is a black nationalist racist. I mean, to the nth degree. And he doesn't even try to hide it. Okay.
Oh, no, he doesn't. And they still embrace him, which is so interesting because their favorite term for every Republican is racist. But you have a real racist there. And they still embrace him, which is so interesting. But now that we have some of the women in Congress that are Muslim and that have been very vocally anti-Semitic, you have other women that were involved in the march that really don't want any part of that. So it's really become kind of a non-starter this year, I think. I did see some people that were at the march, looking on Facebook or on television, but it just didn't have the impact. And I'll tell you, just as a woman myself, I would never take part in that. I mean, it's always been an anti-Trump type of a thing that these women were doing. And they've never been really united in any one thing other than hatred of Trump. So that's not anything that I would have to do with. I want to see women be empowered and just, live their life and do the things that they want to do. I don't need to go scream it from the rooftops. I don't need to put it on television. I just want to live my life, and I want everybody else to live theirs. So kind of a live and let live thing. And these people are a bit too radical for me, trying to tell me how to live my life.
Well, just as an outsider looking in, and very briefly from time to time when the news covers it, at the risk of sounding sexist, it just seems that the women just have too much drama going on.
Yeah, and, drama.
and I see that they are more, and this cuts away, as far as an outsider looking in. I mean, if you're trying to give me a message on television, right, you just really cut away from your message because you're so distracting with all of your drama and the fact that it's patently clear that they're not unified. Women are pulling out of it, even women that are extremely controversial, like Debbie Wasserman Schultz. She was the, of course, she's Jewish, and when they went to the Farrakhan and anti-Semitism angle, she pulled out. And I just see the women, I can't take them serious because they dress up in all these crazy costumes, and there is a lot of screaming, and there is a lot of radical, people there. And instead of showing intelligence and articulating positions, like you said, it's all anti-Trump, it's all the resist movement, and it's all being crazy. And they're
dressing up. Yeah, it's kind of embarrassing.
Well, they dress up like sexual organs, for God's sakes.
Yeah.
I mean, how do you take anybody serious that, is dressing up to look like a woman's private part? I mean, I don't get it.
I don't either. And you know what, Ron? I know so many wonderful, educated, talented, responsible women who are in the workplace, women who are stay-at-home mothers, women who are, doing the things in their life that forward their life, forward their family's life, that you're right. This is just, I just find it embarrassing. I'm embarrassed of those women that are out there in that kind of a format. And I don't honestly even think that they know what they're out there for.
Linda, when you first came on to America Out Loud and you were on that radio program with the 10
Life,
other,
Liberty, and the Pursuit of Pleasure.
And you had yourself and 9 other women, and I think it was 7 more liberal women and 3 conservatives. You were one of the conservative women. But you know what? And I used to listen to that program because I just wanted to hear you and what you had to say. And of course, I'm listening to all the other women. Every single one of those women were very intelligent and very articulate. Can you imagine with the intelligent women that are on, and very accomplished women that are on America Out Loud. Can you imagine if women like that got involved in that women's movement, how much better it would be and how much more forward they could bring the country as a whole with that type of class of women?
Well, and what was so great about that show, and still is, because the show is still on, and will be coming on with 10 new women in a couple of months, is that even though we were people of all different, you know, we were different races, different sexual preferences, different careers, different ages, different everything, different political positions, we all respected each other, and we could have a discussion about something that we didn't agree about, but there was never anybody putting anybody down. There was never anybody rude. And what we found, and I always say this, is that we found that we are more alike than not, despite our political differences.
So, Linda, let's compare and contrast the Women's March with another march that took place recently, and that's the March for Life. And you want to talk about a unified response, especially with all the women that attended. And by the way, this is what is interesting, and it also shows you how the mainstream media tries to propagandize and also minimize the things that more conservative and pro-life people do. So the March for Life in Washington, D.C. had a turnout of over 100,000 people. And there are plenty of photographs of it, and there's plenty of videos on it. And Vice President Mike Pence and his wife attended. And this is, not the first time that they have attended, because they're good Christian people and they are firm believers in pro-life movement. But USA Today reported that only about 1,000 people showed up for this march. There was 100,000 people at this march, and extremely well documented. Now, CNN and MSNBC didn't even cover the march. So you get 100,000 people that show up for a pro-life and Christian get-together in Washington, D.C., and everybody plays it down.
Well, they do, and I'm pretty horrified about this senator in, or is she a senator or a congresswoman in Hawaii, Hirono?
She's a senator.
Okay. And her anti-Christian views. This country was founded on Christian principles, and God was always a part of our country. And we're just really moving away from that. And again, I mean, what do you expect? You get the mainstream media who only shows what they choose to show. It's not a fair and balanced type of media. It's only their side. But they certainly played up the BuzzFeed story that was false about President Trump. And they had that on. And I think that they said they used the word impeached 2,000 times on television.
Well, you know what? Hang on to that, because I want to talk about that. But let me stay with the March for Life and Christian values for a minute, because right now there is an attack on Christian values going on, and the media is absolutely complicit in forwarding this revolution, so to speak, against Christian values. Now what they're taking on are Christian and parochial schools. Now, you and I both attended parochial schools, and I'll tell you what, I don't know about you, but it was a very solid education. It was a very global education, a very well-rounded education, and, you know, I'm not going to say I thoroughly enjoyed it, because I went to a Jesuit Catholic school. I think you did too. But what was your experience when you went to Catholic school, when you went to parochial school?
I think it was the best education I could have gotten. I'm very, very grateful to my parents for having sacrificed to send me to Catholic school. I got a very well-rounded education. You know, we got the history, we got the civics, we got music, we got art, we got physical education. We got a little bit of everything and a lot of the basics, the reading, writing, arithmetic, not a lot of any other stuff that wasn't necessary. We really got a good education in basics, and I really am thankful for it every day of my life because I can do math, I can spell words, I can articulate things, I can, not too great on the music, but I did play piano, and, you know, not a great artist, but I had all the experiences, and it allowed you to find in life what you were good at and where your strengths and weaknesses were. And I just am very, very grateful.
Well, you know, when I finished parochial school, I wanted to go to public high school because a lot of my friends were in public high school and I was athletically inclined and I really wanted to get into sports. And the sports programs at our district high school, which was a very big high school, was just, there was just more sports opportunities at the public high school. So I asked my folks, I said, you know, instead of going to a Catholic high school, can I go to the public high school? And they relented and let me go. And I'll tell you what, when I went from Catholic school, elementary school, to, which included, you know, junior high, to the high school, I was light years ahead of my peers in high school because my Catholic school education had been so intense and global and well-rounded. When I say global, I mean well-rounded. So, I mean, that was my experience. Was that your experience as well?
Well, it absolutely was. And, you know, I was thinking, I just saw a school district, and you might know what it is, that is on strike right now.
Oh, that's the Los Angeles Unified School District.
Yeah, okay, so they're the biggest, on strike, biggest complaining about the size of the classes. And they're saying, oh my gosh, you know, I have 37 kids in my class. How do you expect me to teach? And I was thinking back, I had 60 kids in my class.
I had 50, and I had one teacher in each grade.
I did too.
One teacher with 50 kids. And as a matter of fact, I had 25 boys and 25 girls.
Well, I'll tell you what, we were not a problem. We never disrespected the teachers. And boy, if we did, there was consequences. I mean, you remember those nuns with the rulers that would smack your hands?
Oh, yeah.
And you know what? We all lived through it and it was good for us. And the way that they're teaching now and the disrespect that is allowed in the classrooms and the teachers have basically no teeth to do anything to a student.
Right.
It's shameful. And now they want to take away our Catholic schools and say that something is wrong with that education when it's a better education. But, you know, the bigger question to me, Ron, is why does everybody have to butt in to other people's lives and tell them how to live it? This has been really, really getting pervasive in our society with people telling us exactly how we should speak, how we should think, how we should live, what school we should go to, what we should eat, what size drink we should drink. And I'm just kind of over it. I just want to live my life the way I want to live it without hurting anybody else and have everybody else butt out of it.
Well, let me tell you what, I've got an answer for your question. The reason that they are against Christian and parochial schools is because the secularists, they cannot control the education that you get in parochial school or a Christian school or a charter school. Any type of religion, a Jewish school, okay? They can't control it because it's a separate system, and it just angers them because they can't control it. And look at how they've dumbed down, and you and I have had many conversations along the way about this. They don't teach civics. They teach a revisionist history. Everything's all-inclusive. They want safe spaces. There is a masculization. I don't know if that's the correct word, but basically turning little boys into little girls. And instead of letting them be boys, they've taken away all the contact sports, tetherball, the dodgeball, all of those different sports. They've gotten rid of all of those things, and they're trying to effeminize the young boys that are trying to be turned into men. Hey, I'm going to take one more break, and I'll meet you back here in 1 minute.
Okay.
Let the silent voices be heard. It's the rallying call that started it all. AmericaOutloud.com. For a wide spectrum of programming from world and political news, societal and cultural stories, law enforcement, our military heroes, and much more. News blogs, informative podcasts, and entertaining videos. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Well, Ron, there's 7 easy steps to improve your attitude. Do you know what they are?
No, I don't, because I have a bad attitude.
Oh, do you?
No, I'm just kidding. Go ahead.
Well, here's 7 easy steps for you. The first one is to stand up. The second one is to stretch, take a walk, keep walking, board a plane, fly to Hawaii, and never return.
I think that'd make everybody have a good attitude. I could think of some better places, though, than Hawaii. Even though we love it, okay? Even though we love going to Hawaii. But there's,
I was looking forward to going to Hawaii, but I guess we're not going after all right now.
No, but I got a case that got in the way, so I'm sorry.
Yeah, that happens. But, you know, there's a lot of places to go in the world, and you and I just love seeing so many different places in the world. I mean, the world is like a potpourri to me. It's just so much to see and do and enjoy, and the variety and the beauty of the scenery and the differences in the cultures and the people and the foods is just wonderful. But experts are suggesting that this year in 2019, there might be some places that people have traditionally visited a lot that you might not want to go to this year.
Oh, like what?
Well, one place that they're suggesting that you don't go this year is to the Galapagos Islands, which I think is really an interesting place to go in Ecuador. But what's happened is so many people are going to the Galapagos and they see the giant tortoises and the iguanas. And it's really stressing those animals, and it has an effect on their young. So they're suggesting that, you know, maybe it's been over-touristed a bit and you might want to stay away from there for now.
Well, you know, I think people go there because it's such an interesting place. You know, for that reason, there's a lot of exotic animals that live there. But yeah, you got to watch out, you know, with tourists. You know, it's kind of like the park ranger training that I do, and I say, you know, whenever you have a park, and of course that is sort of a national park for Ecuador, I say your mission statement is 3 things: protect people from people, protect people from the parks, and protect the parks from people. So this is one of those things. You got to protect the parks from the people, because they'll trample all over everything and try to get in the way of the animals, and it does stress them out. Look at what the ridiculous things that we see in Yellowstone, where people get right up in these you know, wild animal faces like bisons, buffaloes, and moose and things like that, and they want to take pictures with them like they're buddies, and some of them get run over, so to speak. But it absolutely stresses the animals out. So I totally get the whole thing with Galapagos.
Yeah, and it's like when we go to Mexico, and sometimes there's a turtle coming up on the beach to lay her eggs,
Right.
and people walk right up to that poor turtle while it's laying its eggs. And I mean, that's just very stressful for that animal.
It
So,
is.
yeah, I could absolutely see that. Well, the second place is somewhere that you know very well. In fact, your family is from there, and they're saying you might not want go this year to go see the Leaning Tower of Pisa in Italy.
Oh my God, we were just there a few months ago, last year,
And we did go see it.
and I lived in Pisa. I lived just 2 blocks away from the Leaning Tower, the Piazza del Ricordo, and I could see it from my bedroom window. And we saw a lot of crazy tourists. But do you remember what we didn't like? There were a lot of vendors from like North Africa, and they had set up stalls where they were selling all sorts of
Junk.
African junk. And
Yeah.
what the heck does that have to do with the cathedral and the baptistry and the Leaning Tower of Pisa? I just didn't get it at all. And it
And they put a
actually.
McDonald's right there, just right outside the square there where
Right.
the tower is. But the reason that they're saying not to go is because, and this is so true, everybody is kind of getting in all these crazy positions to get a photo of the Leaning Tower by kind of twisting their bodies and to make it in the photo look like they're holding the tower up.
We saw
So
that and it was completely stupid.
it's everybody there that does it. But I don't know if that's a reason not to see it, but it is crowded and it is that part of it is a bit annoying, I'd say. The other place and that not to go, and I don't think you and I will be going here, is to the Louvre in Paris to see the Mona Lisa. They say that the Mona Lisa is flat out disappointing. It's just a modest little piece of art, and you can find yourself waiting in very long lines to see it.
Yeah, you know what? I have no interest in going to France and especially going to Paris. And you and I have talked about Paris. We've talked about France. We recently talked about the Yellow Vest movement. I've got absolutely zero interest in going to Paris because I don't feel safe.
Well, I agree with you there. I agree. And then, of course, right now, where they have the yellow vests there, it would be, yeah, a bit intimidating to go there. I'd like to be able to relax wherever I go. Well, here's a place we just were that I really enjoy is Times Square in Manhattan in New York. And the reason they say don't go there is it's one of those places that will overwhelm you. That the excessive number of tourists and traffic and performers and aggressive costumed characters are like a nightmare from which you'll never wake up. And I agree with all of that. There, it is very, very crowded at Times Square. There is a ton of traffic, and there are crazy costumed characters of all different varieties and types. But it's kind of the whole, that is the whole Times Square scene.
Yeah, you know what? I love going to Times Square. We've been there 3 times before, a couple of times when I was doing Fox News, and this last time with our Bucking Bulls at Madison Square Garden, and we stayed right at the Marriott at Times Square, which is in the center of everything. And you're right; those characters that dress up like the Statue of Liberty and Batman and the Avengers and all of that. That's totally nuts. And do you remember that big giant baby with the diaper? I don't know what that was all about, but that had to be probably the most bizarre thing that I saw there.
That was a grown man wearing a diaper in Times Square, and that was pretty disgusting.
And it was about 35 degrees, okay? So that was pretty bad.
Know
But
what I didn't see? I didn't see the naked cowboy one time, though.
because it was 35 degrees
Well,
when
no, he's always out there.
but you know what? You gotta love we were right there in the theater district, and it's kind of interesting to go walk by the different theaters to see what's playing in the different theaters. And you and I had one of the nicest dinners. that we've had in some time. We had to walk, I don't know, a few blocks to go to this restaurant. We tried it out, and it was fantastic. Remember, we had just a lovely dinner together.
Well, we did. And you know what? We enjoy talking to the New York police officers so much. They are just so great, and they're so professional,
yeah.
And they're so nice to talk to, and I really enjoy that. Had a great time in New York. Times Square is a bit crazy.
You don't want to drive in that town.
No. I wouldn't tell people not to go to Times Square. I think it's really worth seeing. Well, here's another place that they say not to go to in 2019, and that is Big Major K in the Bahamas. And they have swimming pigs there. And they're a big tourist attraction, but tourists have again caused a problem with those pigs. They've killed more than half a dozen of them by feeding them.
Oh, you're not supposed to feed any of these animals.
No. So the tourists are, the rules say that they can't get close to them, but they're quite amazing. It's one of those beautiful Caribbean type water beaches and oceans where it's perfectly clear. And it's just quite amazing because they have these pigs swimming around in the water.
Oh, that is interesting. And you and I have been to the Bahamas a couple of different times. And I actually used to train the Bahamian National Police. I used to go there once a year, and I'd go there for about 4 days and do training and have a fantastic time. The guys were really nice. The police commissioner at the time then, his name was Nicholas Raleigh. What a wonderful guy. And I like the Bahamas.
Well, I have been thinking about this all day. I am just absolutely ready to go to the Cayman Islands because I love going to Grand Cayman. It's a wonderful, wonderful place to visit. The water is exquisite. The food is excellent. The whole scene there is fun, and I'm ready. I'm tired of this cold weather right now.
Well, so am I. So, okay, what's your next place?
Well, speaking of cold weather, Antarctica.
And no, you know, this is, I know you want to go there. I know you do.
I want to go to the Arctic, not the Antarctic.
Oh, okay.
I would love to go to the Antarctic. I really, truly would because I want to see it. But I'm too afraid to cross the ocean from the tip of, is it South America or Africa or whatever?
Tip of South America.
Yeah, and cross that ocean to get to Antarctica. So I'm not going there, but it is fascinating. But what they say is it's breathtaking, but it can literally take your breath away. It is so cold, and just save it for the bravest scientists.
You know, I'm going to tell you that I'm a little bit of a scaredy cat in going to those portions of the ocean that are really rough.
And, me too.
You know, because, you know, who wants to get seasick? And you really could get seasick, you know, going to. That's why I don't like, you know, you want to go to Greenland, and I don't want to go to Greenland because you got to go through the upper North Atlantic, which is really rough. And I'm not a guy that wants to be tossed around on a boat and lose my cookies all over the place, so to speak.
Well, now some of the cruise ships, they don't do that crossing the Atlantic to get there. They start over that way. And most of it is kind of like being in the Inside Passage in Alaska where it's not rocky at all. So we'll have to look at that because, I mean, you know me, we've been on a few rough ships and I'm not a fan of them either. Not even about getting seasick. I just don't really like those waves that come up and swamp the ship.
Well, I'll tell you what, I remember when we were on that Mediterranean cruise mm-hmm. a few years ago, and we were going through the Straits of Gibraltar on our way to Barcelona. And I remember we were up on the fifth floor in the business area, and the waves were crashing over our windows. So that, you know, what is that, a 50-foot wave?
Okay.
I'll tell you, that thing was rocking, and I was holding on to furniture. It was not a fun, that portion of it was not a fun trip.
No, I prefer much calmer cruises. Well, another place that's really, really popular for people to go, but they're saying you might want to stay away from in 2019, is Easter Island. And, you know, it's one of the most isolated islands on Earth, and it's critically endangered. It's about 2,000 miles off the Chilean coast, and they have the 800, those monumental statues.
Right.
Right.
The ones that look like giant carved out heads with the big noses. Right.
Yes. And again, this is a situation where tourism has damaged the island and hurt some of the native grasses and things. And then non-native plants are starting to take root there. And it's causing trouble with, you know, with the environment there. So that might be a good place to avoid for 2019. And another one is the Isla de Saporasa in Mallorca, Spain. And this was a big party island. And they used to call it Big Swillers Island. And it had a reputation of being the place where drunken teenagers need to be, which is why we all need to not be there. So they are suggesting that people don't go there. They just have had some problems with the drinking and the people swimming across the channel to get to the island, and just saying, hey, just give it a break.
Well, there's some lovely places that we like. And, you know, of course, we're a huge fan of Puerto Vallarta, Mexico. Not only do you have a wonderful time there, and it's extremely safe to go visit Mexico. I know some people are kind of scared about visiting Mexico, but Puerto Vallarta is, you know, you can walk any time of the day or night and not get accosted, not have any problems whatsoever. We've lived there part-time for about 14 years now, and we just love it. And one thing that people probably don't know, Linda, that you and I know very well, is that PV is an international food destination. And you can find, there's over 640 restaurants. You can find literally any kind of food that you want to find. You can get it in Puerto Vallarta. And obviously the seafood is phenomenal. And I just love the way that Mexicans cook their food, because, you know, you don't get processed food. It's not full of steroids. Everything is fresh. And I love the spices and the citruses that they marinate their chicken in and some of their foods are. I just love it.
You know, I haven't had a home-cooked meal for days. You're making me hungry over there.
Oh, do you want to know what I cooked tonight?
No, I don't.
Well, it was super good.
Panda Express and I have been very close friends this last week.
I'm going to tell you, okay, I cooked a seafood pasta with fresh seafood, and it was just phenomenal. The dog was going wild, and I wouldn't let her eat any of it.
Oh, well, you know what? I'll stick with my panda, because I'm not a seafood aficionado.
I knew it.
So that's why you're cooking it, because I'm not there.
That's exactly
anyway,
right.
you know that beautiful place in Peru called,
Machu Picchu?
I don't know if I say it right, Machu Picchu?
Machu Picchu.
Yes. Beautiful, beautiful place. And I don't know if you recall, but a couple of years ago they have a lot of weather up there, by the way. And they had on the trail, that the Inca Trail, you know, it was closed in a time last year because of the dangerous weather, and people were literally, you know, getting washed off that trail.
Wow.
So they've had a lot of issues with the trail and with the dangerous weather there of late. And what they say is, you know, when a historical site has to close because visitors aren't smart enough to not trek up to the Andes in inclement weather, it's time to rethink how to preserve a cultural icon for future generations. So, you know, they're just saying this is a good time to give it a break and let it, you know, regenerate itself, and let's not have any foot traffic for a while.
Well, you know, and that's a great idea. And one of the things that these emerging countries that are going into ecotourism need to do is remember the eco part of the ecotourism. Because without the ecology, you're not going to have anything. And then the entire beauty of the area, which is what makes people go there, is lost, and it could take generations before it comes back.
Yeah, and that's what happens with coral reefs a lot too. It takes generations to have them start rebuilding, and you know, now at least people are taking a proactive stance, and they're actually planting little baby corals so that they can start, you know, regenerating, especially in Australia and New Zealand. But we do a lot of damage to the environment. Here's another place where we've damaged the environment is Cozumel, Mexico, where tourism became so huge there, and it became such a Mexican destination that the island of Cozumel has suffered a lot from the boats, the developers, the foot traffic and the beach traffic and the water traffic. And it has, you know, again, harmed their environment. So they're saying, you know, let's take a little break. Tell you another place, Ron.
Okay, go ahead. I was going to talk about Cozumel for a second.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, because, you know, I got my open water dive certification there in Playa del Carmen, which is not too far away. But I will tell you, and I was there with our fantastic diving friend and underwater photographer Bob Pasqua at the time, and we were diving in about 40 feet of water. But I'll tell you what, I thought I was going to see lots of nice coral and a lot of fish, and I really didn't see that much. Was it nice? It was absolutely nice, but nothing, according to Bob, nothing the way it used to look, and I was sorry to see that. But you know, I want to sneak back for a second because you mentioned the Cayman Islands, and you were the person that introduced me to the Cayman Islands many years ago. And when we first went there, it was right after that big storm. Remember that big hurricane?
The hurricane, yeah.
They were completely underwater, and we went out to that famous place where the rays are, where the stingrays are.
The Stingray City.
Okay. And you said, oh my God, you're going to see the most beautiful coral reef. You can't even imagine how beautiful it is. And when we were there, it looked like someone went there had just completely pressure washed the whole thing. And there was zero coral there.
Well, there was no fish. There was no sea plant life. There was nothing. The beauty of it, as I saw it, was one of the most spectacular things I've ever seen, and it was completely gone.
And that wasn't
because of
man.
A hurricane, not tourism, right. But tourists can have the same result. Yeah, somewhere else that we've been that I really see why this is in the list is Venice, Italy. And Venice is just one of those places on earth that is so different than anywhere else, but it has so many tourists. And it's kind of a closed place because it's an island, really, and it's a sinking island, and it's polluted, and it's actually smelly.
Yep.
And even the residents who live there are saying, hey, you know, give us a break. They're kind of not wanting tourists to come there right now. It's a catch-22 because the tourists bring all the money to all the little restaurants and businesses. But yet it's kind of destroying their environment there. And, it's worth seeing for a day, but to stay there, it has gotten to be a kind of a smelly place.
No, you're absolutely right. Hey, Linda. Well, Linda, thanks so much for bringing up, you know, these memories and these places, you know, regarding tourism. And I think everybody needs to understand that you just have to respect these places. So I'm looking forward to you and I taking another exciting journey and maybe one of those places. And I'm heading off to bed.
Okay. I love you and have a great night, and give my Desi dog a big smooch.
I certainly will. Have a great night.
Good night.
Bye-bye.